This is the Web Strategies Podcast, a program dedicated to the technology and techniques of marketing your business on the internet. This program with program notes and links is found on our show website at www.webstrategiespodcast.com. And now, the host of the Web Strategies Podcast, internet marketing expert, Tom Anthony.
Thank you, Joe Cipriano, the official voice of the Web Strategies Podcast, and Joe's probably my most long-term client and a friend, and I sure appreciate he has been very gracious in letting us use his voice for the opening close of the podcast. Thank you, Joe. Joe, of course, you can hear Joe on NBC, CBS, Fox Television Network. In fact, I'm a little jealous. I was just reading Joe Cipriano's Facebook page, and Joe's up in New York. I was going to try to see him for the, it's called That's VoiceOver. It was a kind of a conference on the voiceover business and in the Time Center in New York City. And I wasn't able to make it this year, but so I look at Facebook to see what Joe's up to. And it appears that as of the recording of our program today, last night, Joe Cipriano was hanging out with Katie Couric during the broadcast of the CBS Evening News. And there's a picture in there to prove it. I mean, apparently one of the producers of that program is friends with Joe's wife or their former coworkers. But I don't know. I would love to see the network switching center and the director's room at CBS Evening News and see that show go off. So well done, Joe Cipriano. Moving on to the main portion of the Web Strategies Podcast, I want to welcome Robin Segbers to our show. She's principal with Segbers Brand Health, which is actually, it's based in Virginia. But Robin, first of all, good afternoon. Welcome to the program.
And, thank you.
And I know you've done a lot of work actually out of Ohio as well. And Vermont and several other, New Jersey. And so first of all, tell us a little bit about your company, and then I'd like to get into talking to you about what your philosophy is about branding and how to go about it.
Sure. My background, I actually started my career as a product manager for Smucker's, and I launched Simply Fruit while I was there. But I got into advertising fairly quickly, because I seem to be the type of person who craves learning and became a planner in advertising, the brand planner or account planner, sometimes it's just called planner, actually takes the deep dive into an industry and into the client and works on how to position that client within their industry for communication. I absolutely fell in love with that because it seemed like every month I was into a new industry, learning new clients, new competitors, new products. And apparently my ability to absorb is endless. I could love the learning process. So identifying the key insights that really makes a brand what it is something I learned how to do. And has since then really started to learn, take on a different approach of not only looking at a brand and how to communicate it, which is the focus of an advertising agency, but how to live it. And the brands that I had the most respect for were ones that seemed to be able to communicate their promise to their audiences. But when you interacted with the brand live, you could see, feel, hear a difference in the way they treated customers or in experiencing their product. So my philosophy on branding actually grew much larger from communicating brands to becoming more of a brand consultant and helping clients not only define their brand promise, but identify ways of living it, tangible ways of living it. And that's what my company is really founded on, is going beyond communication, but really creating a brand that your customers learn to love and you can deliver consistently no matter how they experience your brand.
You know, I'm looking at some of the clients that are in your portfolio, and there's some, besides Smucker's, some really impressive companies in there. Nestle's drumstick company, which I'm familiar with that product.
Actually, that was a really fun one. Although they melted in focus groups, it was a really fun project.
And Goodyear and Jared Jewelers. And so these are Sherman Williams paints, Falstaff. These are names that a lot of people have, or most Americans, I would say, most Americans have heard of these brands. And so that's kind of a high-level view of some of your background, some of your the foundation of your expertise. A lot of the companies that have owners that listen to this podcast aren't the size of J.M. Smucker, for example. So in terms of talking to... I think probably for the company that I run, our average client is probably a $10 million company or less, which compared to Smucker's is small. And, you know, like maybe 50 or 60 employees. And so for a company that size, how would you approach branding? I mean, what would be the what's day one when you go into a company who's looking to either establish a startup or rebrand?
Well, it's interesting because brand strategy is very scalable. For example, a company like Smucker's would do a lot of research because they would talk to all their constituents. They might talk to employees in different parts of the country. They would talk to shareholders. I mean, that's how I would approach it. I would want to get an internal perspective. I would be in conversation with the family, but then I would be talking to their market, their broker network, grocery store buyers, merchandisers, and understand really holistically what makes Smucker's different from their competition in the world of Jam and Jelly. And today it's actually bigger than Jam and Jelly. They have Crisco and Jif as well. But I would look at all their constituents. In a smaller company, I would again look at all their constituents, but chances are they wouldn't be talking to a population of 300 million potential customers who would buy Jam and Jelly. For a B2B client, I just worked with a company here where I talked to 20 of their customers, and internally I talked to 15 stakeholders. So the brand strategy took much less time, much less cost, but was clearly a means of bringing a very diverse company into one brand umbrella. And it's actually really helps them congeal, if you will, around a single promise that they make. And we're about to launch it internally, but I've heard so much positive feedback from the managers there that the excitement of employees around this is just incredible. And I think when you can succinctly define the promise your employees are making, the internal ability to project that brand becomes so much greater and employee loyalty becomes greater. Well, and that's one of my favorite things about branding. If you've done it right, it's not this big aha surprise. It's, yeah, that's how I feel when I come to work. That's how I want to feel when I come to work.
I think, you know, what you're touching on is a really important point to make. And that is, you know, in my background, I've done a lot of work in advertising, so I'm familiar with branding. But I think to most people, they get the word branding confused with something like a logo.
Oh, exactly.
So, you know, for the sake of those folks who aren't as familiar with the depth of what branding is made of, why don't we talk a little bit about what the different components of branding are?
Yeah, you know what? My favorite brands, it probably helps to understand my view of the world. But if you look at Southwest Airlines or Starbucks or the Ritz-Carlton or Nordstrom, actually, some of those do very little advertising at all, but their identity is a symbol for what they stand for. So when you see the Starbucks logo, it immediately conjures up images, imagery, emotions, connotations of what to expect. And the ability of that brand to deliver that experience over and over again continues to make that identity meaningful no matter where you are. As soon as they stop delivering on that promise, and I know that they've struggled at times to do that as they've grown so quickly, the brand starts to take on less meaning. So where your identity is definitely a reflection of the brand, all the meaning that that identity takes on is because of the work that the company has done to make it meaningful. You could take a brand like Odlots, and I personally think it's a very strong brand. You know what you're getting. You're not your expectations are met. It's not Nordstrom's. It's not Ritz-Carlton. But it's a very solid, consistent brand that appeals to a segment of the market, and they know who they're marketing to. And they deliver exactly what customers expect. And because of that, they have a loyal following. So brands, to me, go much beyond the ad campaign, much beyond the identity. It really goes down to the promise you're making and how well you deliver it.
So in the case of, and you've also done a lot of work in the healthcare industry.
Right.
So now there's an obvious kind of promise that anyone in the healthcare industry makes, and that is we're going to take care of you. But I think that what you're talking about goes several steps beyond that.
Yeah, let me give you an example. I worked with a client here in Virginia that's a small 97-bed hospital, and they're Plaintree designated. That's not a common term, but it means that the Plaintree designation is given to people that have followed all of the training and delivery and implementation of a patient-centered care delivery system, which means that the patient is very engaged in their own care. They have choices. They can get involved in understanding their options. You provide educational materials. You actually are very concerned about the patient's comfort beyond just the clinical care. Well, they reach the highest level Plaintree designation. However, that means nothing if you put it in an ad campaign or tell people, because Plaintree doesn't have an image. In developing their brand strategy, because they were so strongly devoted to Plaintree, patient-centered care is really what they deliver. And again, putting it into terms, I worked with their ad agency. I developed their brand strategy. We actually did an implementation of the brand strategy where all of the different managers of different areas, so whether you were on a surgical ward or a medical ward, or whether you were in the pharmacy or visiting physicians in their offices, you were going to experience the patient-centered delivery of care. You were going to be engaged. You were going to be treated as a human being. And once we did the implementation throughout, and again, it wasn't huge gaps in their implementation because they were already very strong in it. But in converting that into an ad campaign, it turned into Be Yourself. And that ad campaign is running today, but they've actually taken a striking way of communicating it from a baby assembly line. And if you want to look at their ads, you can find them on YouTube. It's Focure Health. But the ad campaign so embraces how it's unique by showing what it's not. It's not an assembly line of care. It's very personal. So taking it full circle, it went from understanding who they were internally, what they were passionate about, making sure they delivered it consistently throughout the organization, finding opportunities to do a better job where it might have been weak, and then beginning the communication of it. And it, to me, it was one of those case studies. And their market share has grown 2%, and they're only a 97-bed hospital. And they're competing with Inova. Inova's huge compared to them.
So then I think that comes back to your statement a little earlier, where you were saying that the kind of work that you do with branding is really scalable, and it is, you don't have to be a huge company to be able to reap the benefits of the kind of company with the integrity to keep your word.
Right. I've worked with hospitals that have a few thousand employees, and I've worked with hospitals that have a few hundred. And even the smallest hospitals probably have around 100, and it's very scalable. I actually worked with a client that had 6 employees, and they were such a high-tech company that they were stumbling over themselves to understand how to communicate what they did. Honestly, it's one of the most humbling experiences I've had, is sitting down in a room with 6 people who have their PhD and trying to figure out how to put what they do and what they promise into layman's terms.
That's definitely a challenge.
Well, it was a lot of fun. It was humbling because I had to look up some of the words they were using in order to understand what they did.
That's, you know, I've also run into that before. And I think that you're right. Engineers are pretty much, they're brilliant people, but they're usually, they usually communicate in jargon.
Yeah, so exactly.
They know what each other are talking about. We don't. we're using a little bit of technology here for this interview in that I'm interviewing you in one city, you're in another one. And by the way, the one you're in is not far from the Oceana Naval Air Station, which
you probably can hear it periodically.
A little bit, yeah. They just had a real big air show there this last weekend, so I think some of those planes are still flying out, and you're probably in the flight path because we can definitely hear it on the broadcast.
Yeah, for the couple weeks before the air show, I thought we might have been under attack because the planes were constantly.
I used to live out there, and you know when there's a ship coming in, when an aircraft carrier is coming in into Norfolk. You can really tell because the air traffic in the Norfolk and Virginia Beach, Virginia area really goes off the chart for a day or two.
Yeah.
but anyway, no worries. That I was going to say that we're using the technology. I'm on Skype with you, and then I have your website open, which, by the way, I think is very well done. You've got a lot of useful information. Just looking at the websites, it is kind of a blog, but it's not. It's a website that has an area where you make postings, and some of the posts, and it looks like I've read two or three of them, but there's many more than that. A well-aligned brand strategy is one of them. Patient-centered care, which you were just talking about. Noteworthy brand experiences. Why don't you tell us a little bit about some of the resources that are on your website in case someone wants to know a little bit more about the concept of branding and the branding process.
Well, you kind of mentioned that I've worked in healthcare, but I've also worked with a lot of other companies, and I try to take a broad view of branding, but apply it in ways that make it tangible. And I probably don't always do a good job of that, but that's my effort is to try to make it tangible. And one of the concerns that I have lately, actually, is that so many brands that were once so highly respected have started to lose the trust of their customers, and BP probably being the most recent example. But Johnson & Johnson has been in the news quite a bit for recalls that they had even with their children's Tylenol. And Toyota was kind of a shock to a lot of loyal Toyota fans. Enron obviously was one of the worst. But there's so many examples recently where consumers are disappointed that I actually started posting about brand integrity. And it's something I feel strongly about. Anybody who has a brand should really take a look at how well they're delivering and how transparent that delivery is. My fear is that as brands that we thought we could trust begin to show that they're not trustworthy, it makes us wonder about marketing in general and advertising in general. And do I really believe any company? And I think it's important to bring that message down to even small companies. And integrity, I think, is going to be more important in the way you do business and the way you communicate, if you want to maintain a certain level of trust with your audience. And trust essentially is what brands are. Brands are nothing if they don't have trust.
Well, you know, I have to agree with you on that. Part of the work that I have done in the past has to do with reputation management. And that's not really, it's a function of branding in the sense that you have to protect your integrity online to keep the brand status as one that is trustworthy. And there are many sites online that offer the ability for consumers to do reviews, whether that's for restaurants or for products. And so every once in a while, there'll be an occasion when, say, a disgruntled employee or a consumer who's just, you know, just a very negative person will get in there and post something on the internet that's overly negative. And the challenge then, I guess, for the owner of that business is to even know that that's happening. And there are ways to do that.
I have a great example. When I was working with Nestle, Nestle owns Stouffer's, and I was talking to the manager of the Lean Cuisine product line. And they already had blogs, and they did a lot with online presenting ideas, meal ideas, and time-saving ideas. It really fit their brand. Apparently, one of their packaging suppliers went out of business, and they had to change suppliers for a period of time before finding one that could exactly match the packaging that they had. In the interim, the packaging was not as high quality, and some consumers started blogging about it, thinking, okay, they're cutting back, they're cheapening the product. And this product manager got online and said who he was, explained what happened, gave them the timing that they expected to have the same level packaging back in the on store shelves or in the freezer section. So the candor that he was able to do that took a situation that could have gotten extremely negative and really nipped it in the bud and maintained integrity.
Well, that's because they were paying attention.
You know, and that's the risk, yeah.
There's, I would say, the overwhelming majority of business owners or companies, because, you know, owners don't necessarily have their finger on everything, but
right.
The overwhelming number of companies are not paying attention. I'll give you an example of one that happened to me just a couple of weeks ago. Olive Garden is a chain restaurant that serves Italian food. I think it's in most places in the country. But I went to an Olive Garden in Chesapeake, Virginia, and it was probably, and I don't say this lightly because I'm mentioning their name on this podcast. I don't say it lightly, but it was the worst dining experience I've ever had, bar none.
Wow.
The place was overly loud. When we were seated, we were right by kind of a pass-through area where the employees, the servers, were going into the kitchen to get the food. And it was kind of half a wall, and on top of the half wall was wine glasses and stuff that they might need, straws and stuff like that. There were servers. It wasn't our server, but there was a server that just came, reached right over our table, right in front of us, to grab a wine glass, right in the middle of our meal. There were cooks in the back that were shouting orders were ready and not being very nice to the servers. There were servers that were yelling back and forth at each other, talking about what they did on the weekend. The food came out. It wasn't... our particular server was actually not bad, but just the environment. The food came out. I had some ribs or something, and they were just completely overcooked. It was awful. It didn't taste good. My girl had some lasagna, and it wasn't all the way hot, and it was only okay. But I mean, for the level of disappointment, I reviewed the restaurant in a review site called Yelp.
Yeah.
Well, and Yelp is the kind of a website that when you, especially for mobile phones, when you're looking through the listings and you want to see if a restaurant's any good, you go there. But
right.
So not only did I have that Yelp post automatically repost in Twitter because I have it set up to do that, somebody was monitoring Twitter. So I got a tweet from a guy that's running a list on Twitter called Hate Olive Garden.
Wow.
And he had 126 people that had a bad experience with Olive Garden in the recent past, and they're all doing these posts. And it really snowballed pretty quickly. I was amazed of how he was able to do a search in Twitter for this particular term, zero in on people that were posting just really random posts about bad service in restaurants, and coalesce them in a single place where if you went there, you could see there's a lot of people that are unhappy with Olive Garden.
That's really interesting. Social media challenges a lot of companies in how to use it and how to respond to it. And it's an interesting blend now, I think, of traditional PR and social media PR. I find myself looking up reviews, not just for restaurants, but software that I might be looking at, or physicians that if I'm looking, you know, I've become the family expert in, tell me what you can find out about this physician. People will write reviews of just about anything, particularly when they're unhappy. And if you're not aware of what's going on, it actually becomes a blind spot that can make you very vulnerable. I have worked with a company that is, and I don't know that this is perfected yet, but hiring people to listen for your brand is something that I would highly recommend. If you can't afford to have an employee, a lot of people are just so understaffed, or employees are wearing too many hats these days. But if you can afford to subcontract somebody to listen for your brand and your competitors, it's a really good way of staying abreast of what's being said about you, because in a medium that can spread so quickly, and for some reason, bad news spreads much faster than good news. If you're not managing that, you become very vulnerable.
I didn't do this on purpose, I swear. But that's one of the things that my company does. So, so this was just really, that was not set up in advance. But the company that I run is called IMS Strategic Internet Marketing, and it does a service, reputation management service that includes that. And that's how we do it. There's a way that you can get a notification from Google anytime a certain keyword or phrase is posted that they find. And one of the things that I've done ever since that service was in the Google Labs, in other words, when it first came out, was I put in a Google alert for my own name so that I could see if anybody else was talking about me or if I did something on the internet, I could see that it was actually found. And then I made it a practice, all of my clients, I know everything that I even have, and this is maybe a good place to end. This is kind of an amusing story I want to tell you, but I had a client, and I won't mention his name. He's no longer part of the business, and the business is still my client. So therefore, I'm not going to mention his name. But he apparently was on a flight to Boston and got arrested by federal agents for being unruly with one of the stewardesses. And I just found that by having a Google alert based on the guy's name, and he had an unusual name. So you sometimes find out stuff you don't even really want to know. But
well, it's interesting. I had an experience where I did an interview with a publication about transparency, and I mentioned a CEO of a hospital that I used to work with, and someone I thought very highly of, who was putting their health reports online, their costs online, before anything was mandated. And, you know, I commended her for doing it. Well, after the interview ran probably 9 o'clock in the morning on a Wednesday, and I'm kind of making that up, but at 9:15, I got a call from the client. The publication had misspelled the CEO's name. I didn't even know that it had been published yet. So that's how quickly it works.
Well, I think that the point that we're making here is that, you know, we are living in a different time. The principles that we discussed at the front part of the interview about branding are really a factor of your life experience and the kind of activities that you've been engaged in your professional career over many years. But then the kinds of things that we're talking about now at the this part of the interview are really where technology is affecting those fundamentals. And certainly one of the largest areas that I think that business owners need to watch is the social media, because it's gaining popularity and therefore power in an ever-increasing rate.
Right. You know, there's one other aspect of branding online that I'd like to bring up, and that's websites. And I think everybody who's in marketing and communications has seen the transition from the kind of what I called literature online to a more online experience. What I haven't seen very much of at all is brands that are making their online website experience similar to the experience customers have when they're in person. And I still think there's a huge opportunity for even small companies to try to understand what promise they make to their customers in their working relationship and figure out how to deliver that in that kind of experience or those kinds of emotions in their website experience. I think it's a big opportunity, and I don't see very many companies really taking advantage of it yet.
I think you're right. I mean, with the possible of exception of some of the Fortune 500 companies, and in particular car dealers, because I think for economic reasons that they've been in a downturn in their business, that they really have to think outside of the box to attract attention. But you know, of the thousands and thousands of businesses out there that are large enough to have a decent web presence, most of them, like you just mentioned, they're just online brochures, and it is kind of sad.
Yeah, I have a great opportunity right now working with a company whose customer service far exceeds their competition in their segment. And they do have e-commerce. The difference, though, when they don't send people to e-commerce, they're traditionally very different from a catalog, because a customer will say, I have this problem, and the company, even if they don't carry it, will find, here, I think this is the solution you need. We don't carry it, but I'll find it for you. So we're finding an opportunity to create that online using chat. They have people in customer service already staffing their 800 number, but the ability to take that experience where most people call and ask questions, they can now deliver it in their e-commerce site, so that if somebody doesn't want to pick up the phone, but they're not sure of the part number and they're not sure the weight of the paper they're ordering, they can type it in and get an answer just as they would on the phone. And it's not that I expect so many of their customers to start using it, as I think it's a way of maintaining the same promise that they make to their customers, whether it's on the phone, in person, or online.
I agree 100%. And probably one of the reasons why I enjoy doing this show with you, because I think we're of a like mind. But I'm going to call time, because the program's normally a certain length. And yeah. Robin, I want to thank you very much for not only for your insight and advice to our audience, but also for some really good examples of what to have in mind when you're thinking about your own image and your own branding for your company. Hey, why don't you give your website a plug?
It's segbersbrandhealth.com. And I'd actually, anybody that goes and visits, I'd love to hear your feedback. And if you have questions or like to learn more, let me know that too.
Robin Segbers is the founder and principal of Segbers Brand Health at segbersbrandhealth.com. And I'll have a link for that on the companion website to this podcast, which is www.webstrategiespodcast.com. Thanks, Robin.
Thank you, Tom.
And with that, I'd like to thank you once again for spending some time with us on the Web Strategies Podcast. I'd like to ask you to do us a favor if you are a user of iTunes, because you can go to the website and listen to any of these podcasts directly at www.webstrategiespodcast.com. But if you're getting it through iTunes, would you do us a favor and just give us a review in iTunes as a podcast of whatever quality you think it is, or whatever you say? I mean, I'm not going to beg you to give it a good review. Just a review would be very nice. I want to let you know that on our Web Strategies Podcast companion website, that I have the actual link to that group in Twitter that I was talking about. And by the way, I edited that interview, and I realized that in the interview I said not the right name. The right name is Olive Garden Hate, not what I said. So if you do the at symbol Olive Garden Hate, or go to the website at www.webstrategiespodcast.com, you'll be able to get that link. And I also wanted to note that because of the way that I was pronouncing it, you may have a little bit of a question of what Robin does at her company at Segbers Brand Health. Not Segbers Brand Health, which would kind of make it seem like a health company. It's Brand Health, like a healthy brand. So anyway, thanks once again to Robin. And as we lead you out of the Web Strategies Podcast, I'd like to let you know that you're listening to original theme music by yours truly, called Westward Leaning. Until next time, I'm Tom Anthony. Have a great one.
Thanks for downloading or subscribing and listening to this episode of the Web Strategies Podcast. Send show comments and questions to info@webstrategiespodcast.com. You can subscribe to the Web Strategies Podcast on iTunes or on our show website at www.webstrategiespodcast.com.